Good morning.
Welcome to our class on practical discipline that's focused on the lower grades. My name is Rowena Swartzenjuber. There is one or two more handouts back there if you didn't get one. Help yourself. So I mainly teach first grade and sometimes second or third. This year I'll have first and second. So that's the basis of where I'm coming from. So I feel like that's really important to keep in mind with what I have to say, is that, because I'm sure this would vary with older students. So I don't know how many of you have read the book Good Morning, Miss Dove. Are any of you acquainted with this? Some of you? Okay. I read it again this last summer, and it was really good. Yeah, I recommend it. So I want to read an excerpt from Good Morning, Miss Stuff. By 8:30, some 250 children, ranging in age from 6 to 12, were safely inside the school building. In various homerooms, they gauged with the uncanny shrewdness of innocence the various moods of various teachers. How far dared they go today? But as the morning progressed and the classes went, in turn, to spend 45 minutes in the geography room with Miss Dove, they dropped their restless speculation. For Miss Dove had no moods. Miss Dove was a certainty. She would be today what she had been yesterday and would be tomorrow. May I answer it here? That is discipline. And so within limits, would they? Single file, they would enter her room. Each child would pause on the threshold as its mother and father had paused, more than likely, and would say, just as the policeman had said, in distinct, formal accents, "Good morning, Miss Dove." And Miss Dove would look directly at each of them, fixing her eyes directly upon theirs, and reply, "Good morning, Jessamine, or Margaret, or Samuel." Never Sam, never Peggy, never Jess. She eschewed familiarity as she wished others to eschew it. They would go to their appointed desks. Miss Dove would ascend to hers. The lesson would begin. There was no need to waste time in preliminary admonitions. Miss Dove's rules were as fixed as the signs of the zodiac, and they were known. Miss Dove rehearsed them at the beginning of each school year, stating them as calmly and dispassionately as if she were describing the atmospheric effects of the Gulf Stream. The penalties for infractions of the rules were also known. If a child introduced a foreign object, a pencil, let us say, or a wad of paper or a lock of hair, into his mouth, he was required to wash out his mouth with the yellow laundry soap that lay on the drain board of the sink in the corner by the sand table. If his posture was incorrect, he had to go and sit for a while upon a stool without a backrest. We'll stop there. I had a student come for his one day of kindergarten, and at the end of recess, he refused to come in. He just ran off. It wasn't safe to leave him out there alone. There was a road close by, and I had no idea what he was going to do. I had six first graders, that I needed to monitor in the classroom. What should I do? Should I chase him down? Should I just ignore him and hope he comes back? What would you do? I'll open it up for discussion. Does anyone have a thought? What would you do?
Safety first. His life's safety.
Mm-hmm.
Or send someone after.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Send someone after him. I like that. That would have been a good option. So what is discipline? First of all, the dictionary definition is the practice of training people to obey rules or a code of behavior using punishment to correct disobedience. We've probably all heard the saying, discipline as a way of life. But it's one thing to hear this and another thing to experience the reality of it. I remember when this saying just really connected with me. I had a first grader. His home life was a mess. His mom would occasionally leave. It was just chaos. And it just became so evident to me that he had no discipline in his life. His desk was a sea of stuff. He had a hard time staying in his desk. There was just no control, no discipline in his life. And that's when it really clicked in my mind how much discipline affects our whole life. It's not just about the punishment you administer for wrongdoing. It's about learning control in everyday life. And the more disciplined we can be, the less discipline we have to dole out. A quote from Handbook for Creative Teaching, some of you might be familiar with this, by David Martin says, "Schools are training, not restraining institutions, where children sit in their seats under their own power." So, why do we need discipline? First of all, it's foundational to being a Christian. I have some verses here in the NIV. 2 Timothy 1:7, "For the spirit God gave us does not make us timid, but gives us power, love, and self-discipline." 1 Corinthians 9:25, "Everyone who competes in the games goes into strict training. They do it to get a crown that will not last, but we do it to get a crown that will last forever." It's one of the fruits of the Spirit in Galatians 5:22 and 23. "But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, forbearance, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Against such things there is no law." 2 Peter 1:5 and 6. "For this very reason, make every effort to add to your faith goodness, and to goodness, knowledge, and to knowledge, self-control." Another reason is for a peaceful atmosphere that promotes learning. 1 Corinthians 14:40, "Let all things be done decently and in order." That's one of my go-to verses. So how can we create this peaceful, disciplined environment where the children will love learning? For starters, have general rules. You will never be able to make enough rules to cover every little thing children can think of to do. That's why I like general rules that can cover a whole host of things, like be obedient, be kind, be honest, respect others. Then when something random comes up that you never thought of, and therefore you didn't make a rule about, these rules can come to your rescue. For example, you made a rule that you're not allowed to hit anyone. At recess one day, you see one of the boys get mad and kick the other one. When you address the issue, guess what he says? "You said we couldn't hit, but you didn't say we couldn't kick." So the real question is, instead, were you kind? Being kind is one of our rules. Teach them respect for others. Teach them to keep their hands to themselves. It takes care of so many other problems, like pushing and other little annoyances. I know of a school where this was not the case, and there was just a lot of nonsense that went on that could have been taken care of if they would have just kept their hands to themselves. There needs to be reserve at school. Teach them not to touch other people's things. They don't need to mess with things on each other's desks or on the teacher's desk. It's teaching them respect for others. Procedures are so important. I feel like this class overlaps a lot with Abigail's that she had yesterday. I don't know how many of you were in that class or if any of you were, but she talked a lot about procedures. How many of you just enjoy disciplining students? Anybody? It's not your favorite pastime. So that's why procedures are so important to me. I don't enjoy it either. Like the saying goes, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Hopefully, there will be some time at the end for you to tell me some procedures you have had or plan to have in your classroom. I would love to hear your ideas on this as well. Let's talk about some procedures inside your classroom, first of all. When they first come in the door in the morning, I like for my students to put their things away, give me any homework they might have had, and use the bathroom before they go and play, so that when the bell rings for school to start, they can just come directly to their desks and we can start our day in a timely manner. A basic one is raising their hands before talking. This one is so important. And I think we all get that. But I also like to have them raise their hand before they get out of their desk, whether it's to get a book from the library, or come to your desk to show you a really cool picture they drew, or maybe it's to ask a question. It just eliminates a lot of chaos. The first year I taught, I got a substitute while I went to Bible school in January, and thankfully, my substitute was not a newbie like I was. She made those children raise their hands before they came up to the teacher's desk. Students must be kept busy. I have found in my experience that it just works best to have minimal spare time. It's nice if they can have a little bit of spare time now and then to maybe work on the puzzle in the back of the room, or draw a picture, or read a book. Those are all good things, but if they do those things all the time, things can quickly go downhill. They start whispering, and the whispering gets louder and louder, and the student studying gets distracted, and next thing you know, there's a fight over who gets to put the last piece in the puzzle, or whatever they're doing. Requiring the children to ask permission before they get out of their seats to work on the puzzle, for instance, gives you the ability to control how many are working on the puzzle at a time. The more there are working on the puzzle, the more likely that problems will arise. If you allowed two with spare time to work on it, then a third and fourth child raises their hand and they're done with their work. Can we go work on the puzzle now? Maybe you could send the first two back to their desk to look at a book now. Or have them come, this is actually a really good time to have them come one at a time to your desk and do flashcards. That is if you're not having class with another grade. A lot of times I have just first grade, and so you can keep that in mind as well. Some of this probably sounds like that's all I have. I understand if you have lots of grades, it can be hard to fit that in. But I'll just stick a plug in here for doing flashcards with each student individually. I just think it's so important, if you at all can. With first grade especially, it feels like there's so much to teach them that if they're done with their work, I like to just move on to the next thing. Extra practice sheets, flashcards, whatever. There's always things to do. Also, remember, little children have short attention spans, so keep things moving so they have no reason to get bored. Because if they get bored, we have real problems on our hands then. Keep them busy. They and you will be happier. Be really careful about letting them go outside the classroom to do flashcards or study for a test or whatever else, especially if you can't see them. And remember, I'm talking about the lower grades here. Occasionally, but rarely, I let them go to the office to read their Bible lesson together, for example, like second or third graders. For first graders, I prefer letting a couple of them just go to a corner of the room to quietly practice flashcards or to read their story to each other. That way they are still in a structured setting and still under my watchful eye. Do yourself a favor and don't just let them run outside as soon as they're done with their work. It's not conducive to good study habits like checking over their work carefully or being neat. because they're just going to try to get finished as quickly as possible so they can go play. And the more you let them go play, the more discontent they get, and they just expect you to just let them go play anytime. Then you also have the students who never or rarely get their work done in time, so they never get this privilege, while some of their classmates enjoy this privilege every day. Also, children left unattended tend to get into trouble. So instead, I suggest have some fun constructive things they can do quietly in the room. Dot to dot, word searches, coloring, Legos, whatever. There's lots of options. Having a disciplined classroom is reducing the opportunities for them to get into trouble. And believe me, there will still be plenty of other opportunities. Now let's talk about outside the classroom. Boundaries. If there's certain places you don't want them to go on the school grounds, just take time on the first day of school to take a walk around the boundaries and point out, you know, you can go, this is where you can go. But you can't go to the woods, for instance, if there's a woods close by or whatever it is. You can't go there without permission. I would love to have some discussion on this next one, and that is the bathroom situation. This one is very challenging to me. If you've taught before, you probably have experienced the frustration of keeping order in the boys' bathroom, or for you men, in the girls' bathroom. They come back to the classroom with things like, he was peeking under the door, or he didn't throw his paper towel in the trash can and now there's paper towels all over the floor. Or, George just sprayed me with water. Sigh. I'm not in there, so what can I do to maintain some control? One thing I've tried is not to let them talk in the bathroom. I expect them to go in and do their business, no dilly-dallying around, and come right back out. I keep a pretty close eye on it, and sometimes I even wait in the hall till they come out. Sometimes there's even nonsense happening as they come out the door, and that allows me to be able to see it and deal with it. So I'm going to pause right there. I would love to hear some tips from the rest of you. How you deal with this. Or maybe it's all peaches and cream at your school. So tell me some tips. What am I doing wrong?
I have found that limiting the number of students that go in at a time helps a lot. There's just one or two.
Yes.
There might not be as much chaos mm-hmm. as if there's four or five.
Definitely, yes. Limit the amount of students in there at a time. I agree with that.
Are you talking about recess time or during school time?
Recess time.
I have a no talking policy. Once they line up and then once they come through the classroom to go use the bathroom, mm-hmm. no talking.
Okay.
It's a little hard to always make them remember that. But.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, yes. I had a co-teacher that did that. I thought that was wise. That was a good idea. If you're there.
Yeah, she's there just like
waiting
on them to get done.
Yeah.
So they're just standing there and don't raise their hand if they have something to say.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very good. Yes. You could form a line and wait in the hall or whatever till everyone's done. Then they know you're there and they don't feel quite so free to just goof off. And Is there any others? I think just really limiting the time in there helps a lot as well. Okay, let's talk about recess. When you dismiss the children for recess, try to go out and get them started on a game as soon as possible. When there's too much free time at the beginning of recess, they start getting into trouble. It's a lot like in the classroom. They'll be happier if they're kept busy. And if at all possible, play with the children. Or at the very least, be out there and watching so you know what's going on. In my In my experience, it is not healthy for the children to be playing alone. So many issues can arise: bullying, fighting over who's caught, etc. They can find a lot of things to scrabble about at recess. And if you're not out there, you have no idea who was in the right and who was in the wrong. It's hard enough when you're out there. But it at least helps, and sometimes you have the one student that's always in the center of the problem, and that kind of tells you something. Why is it always a question whether you're caught? Might give you a little hint that maybe there's a problem. Keep free recess at a minimum. Sometimes they like free recess, but here again, be out there with them and be intentional about keeping them together, not off in little groups. If you have several students going off by themselves, it just is not healthy. If you have problems with students not coming in on time at the end of recess, you could try setting your timer for 3 minutes and let them know that you expect them to be in their seats by the time it rings. A procedure I started a few years ago, I don't know why it took me so long to figure this one out, and Anna mentioned this one. When they come in from recess, as soon as they come in the door, it's quiet time. They need to raise their hand if they want to say something. I used to just let them come in and talk, and then everyone, once they were in and we were ready to start the class, then I would tap my bell, and that meant that it's time to be quiet. This was frustrating, though, to know when to tap the bell, because Susie is in the middle of telling you a long story, and you know as soon as she takes a breath, Johnny's going to try to tell you about the dares he got on that base at recess. So do you interrupt Susie's story? Do you quick tap the bell right in the breath that she takes? When do you ring the bell? So, to me, the solution was a lot easier to navigate. Just have them be quiet when they come in from recess. And then they can still raise their hand and you can answer them and they can talk. But it also, like Anna said, then they're quiet as they walk down the hall and in the restroom. They're quiet the whole time. And they can come back to your room and get started on their work quietly. If they're all just talking when they come in, maybe you couldn't get in quite right away. And meanwhile, there's loud commotion coming from your room, disturbing all the other rooms. So I really like this procedure. So if there's seemingly a small issue that's causing you frustration, instead of just letting it build and build and build and build, try to find a solution or a procedure that works for you. And it just brings peace and calmness. Be clear with your expectations. If there are things you wish were different, smoother, whatever, be the teacher and don't be afraid to implement a procedure. Also, if you have a certain procedure you want them to follow, like gathering for whole school devotions or fire drills, those can be sketchy if you don't have a plan. Practice those ahead of time with the children so they know what to expect. For little children, especially in fire drills, that can be really helpful. If the fire alarm goes, it's very, very loud and it can traumatize them. So just give them some practice ahead of time so they know what to what to expect. Okay, now enforcing discipline. Now what can we do, not if, but when, someone neglects to follow the procedures that we put in place? With little children, I find it doesn't usually take much. Sure, you might have a hardened one now and then that's trying to be tough. But normally, little children want to please you, and first graders especially usually adore their teacher. Be consistent. Don't let small problems grow into big ones. Catch them while they're small. They'll be so much easier to handle. Also, be careful about taking away recess as a punishment. I know this can be a little too handy sometimes. You can think, well, that'll be easy. He can just stay in at recess. It's one thing to make them stay in for a few minutes of recess, but if at all possible, don't, please don't make them stay in the whole recess. They need that break to go get fresh air and run off that energy. If they don't run off that energy, that's going to continue to build as well. In looking back to when I first started teaching, I think I patterned my discipline after how my parents did it, right? Because that's what I would know. But I think it's important to remember that we are not the parents. And I think there is a difference there. Disciplining as a parent and as a teacher, I think, are different. I think we need to be very careful with spanking at school. I hesitate to even bring this one up. None of us like it, I'm sure. I reserve that mainly for cheating. And even then, I've tried to skirt around it. But thanks to my co-teacher, I came to see that was the best way to take care of the cheating issue. I had a student one time who I caught cheating. So I gave them a talking to, and I moved their desk to the front of the row, so they hopefully couldn't cheat as easily. And, oh, good. Took care of that problem. We're good to go, right? And at recess, I talked to my co-teacher and told her all about it. And she said something like, "Did you spank them?" "Well, no, I was hoping I had taken care of it." She encouraged me just to give the spanking. And so I did. And I do think that is the best way for cheating. They need to realize how serious cheating is. I guess lying would go right along with this as well. If they get into that terrible habit when they're young, it will grow into huge problems later in life. None of us want that to happen. I also know of a teacher who taught at a school where spanking wasn't allowed. She really struggled with one of her students who just wouldn't cooperate. And it really seemed like all the child needed was a good sound spanking. But she wasn't allowed to give it. So she had to be creative and come up with other ways. And she was hard on her. And a side note, this child still likes to sit with her in church, even though she was very hard on her. So there's some encouragement for you. As much as they like to try you out and see just how far you'll let them go. In all reality, consistency gives them much security. Some things to keep in mind with spanking. I highly recommend talking to one of your co-teachers before giving a spanking. It's just a really good safeguard to make sure that you're not just frustrated and overreacting to the situation, and that this is actually the best way to handle it. It can be so helpful to have someone affirm that, no, this, yeah, you're not crazy. This is what needs to be done here. Or, in my case, to say, wait a minute, you really need to spank that child. It's also good to have someone backing you up if, for some reason, it doesn't go over well with the parents. If you are a first-time teacher, especially, or even teaching in a new area, I recommend having a conversation at the beginning of the year with your school board or your principal about what is the accepted way to handle spanking. For what offenses is it acceptable? How many strikes? Do you need to have another person in the room? And by the way, it's probably not a good idea to call the parents right before you give a spanking just to make sure they're okay with it. If possible, find out early on in the year if they're okay with spanking, and if you have had that conversation with the school board, like I mentioned earlier, you know that it's acceptable in that school. Just be confident and do it. And then, after school, as scary as it is, please make that call to the parent and tell them what happened. Or even text them and say, hey, I need to talk to you after school. If they're coming to get their child, you can have a little in-person talk with them. And that's really good too. Communicate, communicate, communicate. That is so, so important. Does anyone have any thoughts, any procedures or questions? Yes?
I think what gets me worse than anything is like the gray areas where you're not sure if it's, you just can't quite put your finger on what the problem is. Like, maybe you can tell a child needs to use the bathroom, so you're like, hey, you need to go to the bathroom, and they're like, no. And 10 minutes later, they go to the bathroom, and you're like, okay, you did need to go to the bathroom, but maybe not right then.
Right.
I don't know, like, when that happened, it happened several times, I was just like, I kind of just let it go. But I didn't feel quite comfortable with that because it wasn't very honest.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know.
Yeah. I would probably, I just like if they go every recess. They don't always, but I like if they do. I would maybe, if I saw someone that looked like, little children just need to be told sometimes. Maybe I do that too much, but, you know, if especially if I know the student has a problem, I would just maybe say, just tell them directly. If you only knew, their mom might be doing the same thing at home.
So how do you go about controlling the problem over a... Do you ever make them wait?
That is a good question.
Let me get one.
So yes.
I have got burned. I had a first grade girl, so I'm a 40-year-old man. Mm-hmm. She was standing beside my desk, and she emptied her bladder right there. Mm-hmm. So today, it's scary.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want that to happen again.
No, I totally get that. There's been accidents in my room.
So I'm just like, they need to go. I don't want that to happen again. But still, we have to teach them something.
Right.
Control or discipline. Or
right.
Restroom, recess, you go for sure.
Yeah.
Like
yeah. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
Would you make them ever wait to try this? I'm saying 3 minutes, not an hour.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, I will make them wait sometimes. I don't know. This is one that's been kind of a struggle for me because, like you said, you have to teach them discipline, right? They can't just go anytime that they want. I mean, you're in the middle of teaching something important they need to learn, and they're frantically waving their hand. And if they're frantically waving their hand, maybe just let them go. You do have the children that know how to work the system. Maybe know how to look frantic. Maybe sometimes I wondered if it was actually that big of a deal, but neither do you want an accident. I kind of struggle with that one. I think, okay, well, why do I even fight this? Let's just let them go whenever they need to go. Because I don't have to deal with the mess. So I don't know. I guess my thing would be is I would just make sure they go at recess. And yes, they will tell you no, they don't have to go. I had a little boy one time before we went on a field trip, and I wanted them to all go use the bathroom. No, he doesn't need to use the bathroom. He doesn't need to go. Okay, finally gave up. Sure enough, we get on the big bus for our field trip, and after a little bit, I need to use the bathroom. I still don't know for sure if he needed to use it or if he wanted to go check out the bathroom at the back of the bus. So there's that. Anyway, but yeah. Then you just think, aha, I told you so. So yes, it can be a struggle just to get them to go.
Another thing for me is if one asks to go to the bathroom and be allowed into, then there's two or three others that automatically need to go to.
Yes. Then it's just, a whole string of them. Well, they have to go too. I think one thing that could help this is if you'd let them just go use the restroom when they need it, but have an understanding that at recess, they're going to stay in for, you can do this different ways, obviously, but they'll just stay in for a couple minutes or however long it took them out there. That's how long they're going to stay in at recess. That type of thing. Obviously, you want to be careful with that, because if you have a really sensitive child that feels like that would just be terrible to have to stay in at recess, it doesn't take care of your accident problem, because they will risk that.
Going back to spanking, how often do you spank a first grader?
Wait a minute, didn't I say I didn't want to talk about this? Just kidding. That's a good question. What do you have in mind?
So I've taught first grade for 11 years. I think 11. I've ever spanked one first grader. And yet, I consider one of my biggest failures in my school teaching career not spanking the right person at the right time. So spanking is hard for me, very hard.
Mm-hmm.
Probably harder than a young girl. But still, I had those students in first, second, third, and sixth grade. And I just look back and I should have spanked that little boy in the first week.
Mm-hmm.
And when I didn't, I basically felt like I lost him. I mean, I had never...
Never got his respect.
Got to where I should have been,
yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Do any of you have any thoughts on that? How often should you spank a first grader?
And he was the type of boy that was just, what was the problem? Or was it actually true or was it not? And then the first grader that I did spank, I think you kind of validated my concern. I was never quite sure. Well, I was sure in a sense, but he did a test, and we put our books behind our desk right away, so, and then picked them up pretty quick. But so immediately put it behind his desk, and he immediately raised his hand, and I said, "You cannot pick up the books for me." So I said yes without thinking, and he goes around and picks them up. Another hand goes up and said, "Pace looked at that test." And he was looking for an answer to make sure he was right.
Oh.
I spanked.
Yeah. Yeah, that can be so. So
in my mind, that was. I don't know that he did cheat, but that was his intention to cheat.
Right.
If his answer was not right, he was looking for other answers on other people's tests.
Right. Yeah. I know there are times you just don't know for sure. I had a student one time, I don't know, I try to find procedures or things that I can do to keep this from happening, but there was a spelling test, and I believe I saw their desk go up, and I had seen some erasing that was done or something. Anyway, their spelling list was right inside their desk, so when they opened it, they could just see it. That's really hard to know what to do with. especially if you don't know for sure. And then if they say no on top of it, then what do you do? I tend to think that if it's for cheating, it will probably come up again. So if you're not sure the first time, maybe just keep an eye out. And for example, now for that spelling test issue, just have them throw away their spelling test, their spelling words. I guess I'm just assuming you all know what I'm talking about, but in CLE, they have a list of spelling words that they practice writing every day. And anyway, so you can just have them throw away those lists before you ever take the test. That can help with that.
You mentioned not, like, keeping spare time to a minimum. I had 10 fourth graders last year, and in 10 students, you have a very wide range.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so you had one or two that are done when the other extreme is on number 5.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
How do you deal with that?
I know, you can have a whole variety within one grade, and that is a struggle. I would probably tend to find constructive things, like sometimes you can get little projects that they could work on. There's lots of things at Hobby Lobby or things like that, you know, a painting project, or I don't know, I know there's another one. Miss Diane, what was that one that you use for art? The little, was it bead art or something?
Diamond art.
Diamond art. That's something they could do really quietly at their desks. Just, or have them take another subject maybe if you can find something that interests them.
Would you recommend like giving them English worksheets or just that big book of the things that I don't use?
Yes.
Much?
Well, I can give a book report. I made mine read like really, I have interesting books and I'm just like, read the book and then tell me what you liked about it. Because if they read the book, right, then they haven't actually read the book. They're like, okay, done, now what? Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, what was it?
So does that work if you don't, like if you assign one of them a book report per se, but not the rest? Are they usually fine with that?
I mean, you have to kind of encourage them sometimes.
Yeah.
2 chapters this period. Or another trick I do is penmanship. I'm like, oh, so you're really done? But it doesn't look so nice, so I guess you get to do a page of penmanship. And maybe next time, we'll write your lesson a little neater.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I like that. Okay, I would love to keep listening to your comments, but I did want to finish up here, and then we can discuss if people still have more things. I want to read another excerpt from Good Morning, Miss Dove by Frances Gray Patton. Back in the classroom, her castle, as it were, Miss Dove sat at her desk on the dais and closed her eyes. Below her, 5 rows of lesser desks stood tenantless. The blackboards were washed clean of drawings of isthmuses and peninsulas. The sand tables were shrouded in oilcloth. But Miss Dove was not closing her eyes against the sadness of these things. She was trying to visualize clearly the 2 score children who had left her. For 6 years, she had pruned and polished and molded them and had sought to blow into their clay the breath of purpose. Now they had passed beyond the scope of her influence, beyond the aid of her stricture or approval. She did not wish them back. She wished only to believe that they would do well without her, but she had to wait and see. Miss Dove was like an author whose book was on the press, like a cook whose cake was in the oven, like a flight instructor whose cadet had departed on a lonely mission in the sky. For weal or woe, her job was done. But as the author ponders the merits of that poetic passage in his 3rd chapter, as the cook wishes she had flavored her batter with almond instead of vanilla, as the instructor wonders about forced landings, so Miss Dove tormented herself with questions. I just feel like I can really relate to that last sentence. I think back to different situations and I just wonder what I should or could have done, what I would do differently. My mom told me, You can't just beat yourself up over it. And I believe that. We do what we think is best at the time with the skills that we have. Will we make mistakes? Absolutely, we're human. We do our best with God's strength and leave the rest with Him. If God is for us, who can be against us? Romans 8:31. So do your best, and may God richly bless each of you in the coming year. Thank you for coming.